Welcome to the Transform Your Mind Radio Hour and Podcast, a show about transformation, mindset transformation. This is Life Coach Marnie Young, and in my book, Out of the Snares, A Story of Hope and Encouragement, I share my journey of being born in poverty in Guyana to have an abundance in America. And I did it by changing my mindset. Let's go do it. Each week, I bring you guests or one-on-one coaching sessions to help you change your mindset and transform your life.
Welcome back to the Transform Your Mind, Transform Your Life radio, podcast, and television show. I'm your host, Life Coach Marnie Young, and sitting in the guest chair today is David Richness. David is the author of Cycle of Lives, Stories of Emotional Triumphs and Trials of Cancer. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Marnie. How are you today?
I am doing excellent. I am going to enjoy your conversation today. I love hearing about stories of triumph. So let me give you a little bit more information of David, just a quick bio. David is a motivational speaker, personal consultant, and like I mentioned, author of Cycle of Lives and also Winning in the Middle of the Pack. Cycle of Lives shares 15 stories of trials and triumph with victory and defeat. Many books only share one perspective. However, David's book provides cancer stories told from 15 different perspectives, allowing readers to examine a wide range of experiences, events, emotions, backgrounds, and viewpoints. This array of human experiences will help readers to grow in empathy and better understand how issues like suicide, abandonment, loss, survivor guilt, abuse, fertility, and more affect the way people deal with the traumas that shape their lives, cancer or otherwise. So yeah, I can just imagine, David, you know, how these stories changed you as a person, because, you know, we, especially when you see people being in the depths of despair and bringing themselves out of it, you know. So one of the reasons that I am specifically into the mindset and transforming your mind, because I'm sure, and I haven't even, you know, heard the stories yet, I'm sure in order for them to do that, they have to transform their mind in some way. So as we start off, how has your life been impacted personally by cancer? Why did you start on this path?
Sure, thank you. And you're very right, right? That's the whole focus of what you do, right? Is helping people understand and get in touch with those transformations, right? Those pivot points and having the right mindset. I think what brought me to this project was is in answering your question, is my sister was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer when she was 2004 or so. So she was right around 40, married, two young kids, you know, great profession, you know, life going great for her. And all of a sudden now she was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer. All that was going to be taken away. And, you know, that was profound on a lot of different levels, right? Because not only was she going to face the reality that she was going to die soon, and most likely going to die, right? Some people get a terminal diagnosis and they end up beating it, but most people don't if it's terminal, right? If it's a terminal diagnosis, but, you know, but there was also other things, right? Like she had to have conversations with her kids about things, with her husband, right? She had to kind of come to peace with, you know, the fact that she was going to be moving on. And there was a lot of different aspects of it that she had to deal with. And I think that's kind of true with anybody that might have that type of an issue, right? Where you're forced to face your own mortality.
Yeah.
And with cancer, especially, you're kind of given, if that's a positive or a negative thing to say, but you're kind of given sometimes time to get all that stuff in order, right? A lot of people die on the spot, right? You don't get to kind of like work through these issues. So we're not real good at working through these issues.
So let me ask you, I know I'm jumping ahead of myself, but it seems like a good point to ask the question. Do you think that from the people that you've spoken to, do they appreciate getting this time? Like somebody says, how much time I got? And I said, 5 months. Do they appreciate that time or they prefer not to know?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's probably super personal. I think that, look, here's the whole reason that I wrote the book was that if you are going through trauma or know somebody that is, whether it's terminal or not, but it's related to cancer or, you know, some other major trauma, it's that if you do have the opportunity to form deeper connections with the people that are in your life and the people that you love and that love you, this gives you a window to do that, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is that we often self-isolate and or we abandon people, not like willingly, but we just, we don't know what to say. We don't know what to do. We don't want to make people feel guilty. We don't want to say the wrong thing or bring people down or whatever. And so a lot of times, Myrna, even with that kind of, I got 5 months to live thing, people still find it very difficult to form those really deep, meaningful connections because it's a really touchy thing to step around, you know?
Yeah, I know. Wow. I mean, I hope that I never have to face that. So.
Right. But if you do, though, I mean, let's talk about this, right? If you do, there's going to be a certain amount of people, Myrna, that are not going to know how to deal with you. And they might disappear because it's easier for them to disappear than to deal with you. There's right. also people that you don't want to deal with because you don't want to bring them down. You don't want to see your loved ones go through the pain of knowing that they're going to lose you. So you might hide a little bit. You know, so it's a really tough thing because in the end, we all want to form those meaningful connections, but a lot of times we have these limiters that don't allow us to, and they're reasonable, right? It's reasonable to think those things. So, you know, talking to people that are in the book, we kind of talked about how do you deal with that emotional side? Like how do you navigate that?
Yeah, that is tough. So how did you deal with your sister? Let's be, you know, specific. So you're able to empathize with your sister that mm-hmm. at 40 years old, that's a horrible diagnosis. And even though you write that some people might get this terminal diagnosis and they need it. I've heard lots of people. I listen to Joel Osteen every week and he loves telling the story. How his mom was given 5 months to live or something, and now it's 40 years later, she's still alive. So you might have some hope, especially if you're a spiritual person and believe in God and, mm-hmm. and know that God is in charge of your life and not the doctor. But it's a terminal, you know, regardless of how the individual processes it, you as the brother, how did you deal with your sister and how did you help her or
mm-hmm.
affect you?
Mm. Yeah, no, that's a great question. So what we did was throughout our adult lives, we were close sometimes and not close sometimes because life just gets in the way, right? Like she had her family and kids and friends and work and, you know, just life gets in the way. You know, after the diagnosis, though, I think we probably talked way more regularly, you know, purposefully. Because I had a friend recently who lost one of his best friends, and he said, "Look, they couldn't count the number of cancer cancer nodes on his lungs because there was too many, and he died really quickly after diagnosis." And my friend said, "Hey, if he's going to get to the finish line and pass over to the other side and be with God, he might as well do it now. Like, why put him through all that pain?"
In the book Warm Socks, Life Lessons from My Father by Edna Brown Mark, the author shares that after meeting a stranger in a medical clinic, she realized that money and material things wasn't what she needed to be happy. She realized it wasn't what her father had given her, it is what he had taught her to have a happy, fulfilled, and purposeful life. These gifts were priceless. Warm Socks, Life Lessons from My Father is a captivating memoir you would want to give to anyone you care about. It's a book about a father who didn't give his daughter the material things she wanted, but he gave her the most important gifts of all. Powerful lessons to have a successful, fulfilled, and happy life. It's a page turner. You wouldn't want to put it down. Pick up your copy of Warm Socks, Life Lessons from My Father by Edna Brown Mark today on Amazon. Hey, are you always scrolling Amazon trying to find the best deals? How about trying something different and head over to happyhourshopping.com. Happy Hour Shopping is an online store where you can find the best Amazon products at happy hour prices. Here you will find interesting, innovative, and high quality merchandise at reduced prices all in one store. This online store has a collection of over 5,000 products, including luxury, beauty, clothing, electronics, automotive parts, kids' toys, and much more. So, enhance your life and save time. Grab the best products any online store has to offer as soon as possible. And don't miss your opportunity to save both time and money, because opportunity never knocks twice. That website again is happyhourshopping.com.
Right. Sometimes the reality is there. I felt like with my sister, even though she fought for 3 or 4 years, I mean, there wasn't an option for her to survive, because it was a massive tumor. It had spread, and it was just not possible. So that we came to each other with intentionality. I don't know that we said, okay, let's talk about every little thing every time that we have an opportunity, because we're only going to have so much time. And so we didn't do that. But I think what we did is anytime that she reached out, I was available. Anytime that I reached out, she was available. We didn't always talk about heavy stuff, but we talked about a lot of heavy stuff.
Right. Okay.
You know, which was good, right? That's a positive that we could take from there. I remember calling her up one time. And she picked up the phone, and I go, hey, June, how's it going? And then I said to myself, I go, oh my God, she's dying of brain cancer. How do you think it's going? Right. And I started putting this like ominous feel on it. And she goes, ah, I'm fine. Nothing. It's all good. Hey, what do you want? You know, it was like, no big deal. So not everything is heavy every minute, but knowing that there was a finish line fastly approaching, I think that we, with intentionality, really tried to, you know, bond as deeply as we could.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people that are given that diagnosis would say, hey, you know, I'm going to make peace, because they tell you that. I mean, I hear it, you know, I don't know if people actually do it, but they say, put your house in order, make sure you got your will, make sure you tell everyone you love them. And maybe you should do the things that you've been putting off and get to do it. Do you think that people do that, like their bucket list? Do they do that?
I think that's a rarity, because wow. Yeah, I really do. You know, we live in denial. And one of the people I spoke to was a doctor. She's an oncologist at NYU. You grew up in a time where, if your listeners can imagine, she was trying to build her practice as an oncologist. And she went to one of the male doctors at the hospital, and she said, hey, you know, you haven't been referring me any patients. Is there anything I can do to help you feel comfortable referring patients? And he looked at her and he said, you're a woman with long curly hair. You think I'm going to give patients to a woman with long curly hair? Oh. I mean, imagine that at a time. Right?
Wow.
So for 40 years, she's an oncologist. And one of the things she told me that really made a lot of sense to me is she said, you know, the human brain is not wired to be able to really contemplate in a understanding way our own mortality. It just doesn't happen. And I think that kind of explains how we don't ever want to get our house in order, and we don't ever want to do those kind of things because we just don't think we're going to die. And yeah. If we do think we're going to die, we just can't even really understand what that means. And so the vast majority of people that I spoke to, they did have a fair amount of denial, either from them or the people that they loved. They put off taking care of things. They were abandoned by people that loved them because they didn't know what to do. They self-isolated and didn't close loops that they probably should have closed because of all the things we just talked about. Some did. Some took that opportunity to just work every little detail of their existence together out. But most people didn't. So I think the answer is mostly no.
Wow. Again, the movies. That's what the movies tell you. But you're right. It's not. Which is why they said, and I know you mentioned in your bio, that suicide is so foreign because most of us are wired to preserve our lives, and we will go to great lengths to stay alive, even when the quality of our lives are taken away. You would say that people says, you know, I still want to live. So that is very good information to put out to someone that's either, you know, listening because they know someone that's going through trauma, or they're in this space right now because life has a way of bringing things to you that you need to hear. Do the things that you've always wanted to do, and, you know, make sure everybody knows that you love them and put your house in order. I'm in this space where I know that there's people that even though they know that they're dying, refuse to do a will and all that stuff, you know. So there's nothing wrong with having hope, right? but you still need to do certain things, you know what I mean? Hope can come and you can survive, you can beat the odds. But like you said with your sister, it probably wasn't possible. It would take a miracle. Right.
And look, the book is not really about death and dying, right? Cancer does not always mean death. And what I've learned through this process, Myrna, is not to judge the severity of somebody's trauma. So would be having the tip of your finger cut off any more traumatic or less traumatic than having your leg cut off? I don't think so. They're both unbelievably traumatic, and I don't think one should be compared to the other, because how do you compare somebody's losing a cat to somebody else's losing a dog, right? I mean, like, how do you, loss is loss. And even the fear of cancer can be unbelievably traumatic for some people. Right. Imagine if you received a diagnosis. It was an early diagnosis, like a stage one cancer or something, and very, very treatable. You know, science has come a long way. It's very treatable. But now you got to live the rest of your life thinking in the back of your head, oh, my gosh, am I allowed to go out in the sun? Should I eat a certain thing? Do I need to exercise more? Is this cancer going to come back and take me? Do I not have kids because I don't want to lose them in case my cancer comes? I mean, the fear of cancer can be just as powerful as actual cancer, right? And not all cancers, most cancers are not a death sentence. Most cancer diagnoses are not a death sentence. So what I wanted to do was to explain, figure out what are people going through that we might not know, or what traumas have affected them so that they're able or not able to navigate this kind of traumatic thing of cancer, whether it's a death sentence or not. How are they able to do it or not able to do it? Because we don't really often know what people are going through. And you know, it's like, don't we want to form deeper connections with the people around us? And we're hoping that they want to form deeper connections with us. But until we start understanding what they might have been going through, how are we going to connect with them in a real authentic, intentional way, do you know?
Aren't you tired of fantasizing about that car you could drive, that house you could be living in, or that business that you could start? Make your dreams a reality today by getting back on track. Because Back on Track has experience in removing everything. Their services are more affordable than ever. And as a bonus, they will also offer you their credit building guide that can boost your credit score over 100 points. That will make you get approvals instead of denials on every application. What would you do with more than 100 extra points on your credit score? To get the credit score that you deserve and the keys to that home, to that car that you've always dreamed of. For more information, visit www.ficorush.com or give them a call at 404-694-6569. You have to get back on track.
It may surprise you to know that over 90% of businesses fail within the first 5 years. That is why Artsy Animate want to help you scale your business for success. According to business owners, two reasons for failure are money running out and ineffective marketing. In order to grow your business and shine, you need people to help you grow. Here at Artsy Animate, we dabble in all of it. Our team of experts all have over 5 years' experience. We develop top quality websites and offer you our best SEO strategies to help you rank and stay ahead of the competition at affordable prices. We would help guide you reach your ultimate goal, success, bringing in more clients for your business. For more information, visit us at www.artsyanimate.com or contact us at support@artsyanimate.com. The website again is www.artsyanimate.com.
Yeah, that is, you know, and you said that we it's really interesting that we never want to look at our own mortality. I don't know what the science is on that, but we all know they have the saying that the death and taxes are the only thing that are guaranteed. And yet we don't want either of them. You know what I mean? But you're right. Medicine has come a long way, and it's not a death diagnosis at all. You know. So, all right. So one of the things you said though is that when you went and you interviewed these cancer survivors or people that had cancer or had the trauma, even though each one of their stories were different, that you found something that was consistent, like there is a main thread. Can you share what that is?
Sure. So there were two things that was consistent. And just to add one more thing to what you just said is it also is not just people that had gone through it and loved ones, but also caregivers, doctors. You know, I spoke to people that actually never had cancer themselves, but just their lives were centered around cancer as a caregiver, or maybe they were with a loved one who went through cancer. So so I wanted all those different perspectives, because I think that it's not the same. If your spouse is diagnosed with cancer, there still is a unbelievably deep and really traumatic set of emotions that go through you as well, right? You're not even the one with cancer, but imagine what you have to go through watching your spouse go through this, right?
Sometimes how you're responding is worse than what they're, you know, they might come to terms with it, but you can't. And then
Right, because maybe you were abandoned as a child or felt abandoned or never felt loved. And then finally, this is the one person that's come along that you that can trust is not going to abandon you. And all of a sudden they're going to abandon you. And you're like, holy cow, right? This is right. So it could affect the loved one just as much, or like you just said, more than even the person. But the two things that I found that were quite consistent with every person I spoke to, whether they made the book or they didn't, is one, which I found fascinating. And you probably realize this because you've talked to, you know, 100+, you know, amazing people for your podcast, is that no matter how crazy people's lives are, nobody thinks their life is that interesting, right? They're just living their life. Right. I started most conversations with, and, getting into their story, and they would go, nobody really wants to hear that. It's not that interesting. And it's like, yeah, it's pretty darn interesting. Right. Like everybody has an interesting story, but we're just living our lives. So we don't really measure it that way. We're just doing what we do. Right. If you talk to Oprah Winfrey, you're going to go, oh my God, I have the most interesting life of the 21st century, right? But she's just living her life. She doesn't think she's interesting in that way that we think she's interesting, because she's just being her, right? So no matter how fascinating these people were, they thought that their stories weren't that interesting. I found that pretty fascinating, because it really gave an insight into, you know, people are just doing the best they can. We don't often believe that things are tough for people, you know, that we think it's going easy for them, or we think it should be easy when it's really tough. We don't know. We just don't know, right? They're just doing what they do. So I think to really know somebody is to really understand how really, truly interesting people's lives are. That's one. And two is that kind of the theme that we've been talking about, which is almost everybody, not everybody, but almost everybody had a big identification, Myrna, with the thought of, I don't know if I'm equipped to form really deep connections with the people around me about what I'm going through or about what they're going through. Like, they felt like dealing with the tasks, like, oh, how do I get to my appointment? How do I get my kids watched while I'm in the chemo chair? How do I navigate time off of work? How do I eat healthier? These kind of things they could wrap their brains around. But how do I talk to my friend about what they're going through? How do I feel safe to lean on you in my time of need? These kind of emotional things people were not well equipped with. And that was very, very consistent with almost every single person I spoke to.
Do you think it's because people don't really like to ask for help?
That's definitely part of it.
One or two, right?
Yeah, that's one thing. And it's understandable, right? I had a guy who, you can understand this, and he lives in Florida, not too far from you, one of the book participants. He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. And without getting into too long of a story, there were two times that that he was abandoned in the worst way possible. Okay. He's never going to ask for help, right? He's just not going to ask for help. Why? Because his mom killed herself. He actually walked in on it. His girlfriend, as he's getting wheeled in for his first surgery to remove a grapefruit-sized sarcoma from his stomach, that he might not survive the surgery. And if he does, he might not survive long after that. As he's being wheeled into surgery, she says, yeah, this is not my life. I can't handle this. I'm out.
Wow.
And so in the two times in his life that he's been abandoned, so you think he's ever going to ask anybody for help?
No
way. Not his dad, not his friends. He didn't even tell his work that he had cancer. He took like 3 PTO days. And that guy had 5,000 treatments, right?
That's a sad story. Wow.
Yeah, but it's a good story. It's a wonderful story in the end, because he did survive. He did learn how to love, and he did learn how to lean on people. But what he had to do was trust that that not everybody was going to abandon him, and that it was okay for him not to rely on just himself. He could rely on other people, and he learned that. And it was a beautiful thing when he learned it. But you're right. I mean, fear of abandonment is one. How about this? How about you don't want to burden people? That's another one that's reasonable.
That's, or how about a tough one.
Yeah,
how about be a burden? Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Or how about you feel shameful? Like you're ashamed that you need the help, right? I mean, there's a million reasons, Myrna, that people won't lean into this thing and be like communicate what they really need or what's really going through their heads, because if they even are in touch with it, it's often really, really tough to communicate that even to the people that are closest to us.
Wow. So it sounds like your book is serving a great purpose to start to those conversations and to let people understand that, ask for help, you know? So I'm feeling you. I'm understanding maybe a little deeper than I've understood before about, you know, people talk about, you know, the last person I have on this show to talk about cancer is a girl that got cancer at, I think it was 25, and she beat it. And she did a documentary and she wrote a book about it. But now we're talking about the supporting cast and, you know, how people ask for help, and the stories is not necessarily, I got cancer, I died from it, or I survived it, but you're going deeper into the maze of feelings and emotions and asking for help. So that's amazing. It's great to bring awareness to that, because a lot of people don't have that awareness. Now you also say that as an endurance athlete, you rode 5,000 miles from California to Florida, and somehow that played into the story of your book.
Yeah.
How did you connect that?
So connect, that's an interesting word, because that's exactly why I did it. So when my sister got this diagnosis of her cancer, I was just at the starting point of changing my life from being kind of an overweight. I was a smoker. I was sedentary, so I wasn't active at all. Excuse me. I had a 4-year-old twins, and I had just gotten them out of a really bad situation at home, and got the three of us to safety. So we were kind of on our own, right? And here I was, not healthy, not active, not living my best life for sure. And I said, well, I got to start becoming active, and I got to start becoming healthy, and I got to do the things that are going to allow me to feel better about myself. And so I started doing athletics, and athletics for me was running. Then I started biking. Then I started swimming. I started doing triathlons and Ironmans. And then I said, well, if I could run 10 miles, why don't I try to run a marathon? And if I could run 26 miles, why don't I try to run 50? And if I could run 50, why don't I try to run 100? So I did these kind of more and more endurance athletics to see how far I could push myself and find out if I had limits, what they were, because if I could run 10, why couldn't I run 20? And if I could run 20, why couldn't I run 50? And if 50 is the limit, well, why? No, because I could probably run 100. And what's the limit? So I always wanted to find what the limits were. And when I'm doing the book, and I was talking to people, I thought, you know, we're all as humans connected by really only two things. We're connected by emotion. We all have the same basic emotions. We don't always show them or experience, but we all have them. We possess the same basic emotions, and we're all connected by stories. Who doesn't love a good story, right? And so I thought, what better way to connect the stories than to jump on my bike and go on a solo bike ride to connect the people that I had been talking to. So I was like the thread that connected these stories. So I zigzagged across the United States. So from basically California to Florida, turned right, went down to Tampa, went across to Orlando, and then up to New York City in kind of like a zigzaggy way, in a very short amount of time, only 45 days, solo on a bicycle. And that way I could connect the stories. So the book is actually 15 stories. And then in between each of their stories is a very short narrative that follows my bike ride and the really interesting people I met along the way and that type of stuff. So you said, how did you connect all that? I did it by connecting. That was my whole idea, was to connect the stories.
I got it. I picked the right word. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, awesome. So What I was thinking, though, and you started off your story saying that, is, you know, one of the ways that we can prevent illness is by not only eating the right foods, you know, keeping our minds in a positive mindset, but also by athletics. So you you were saying that, you know, when your sister was diagnosed, you felt that you weren't doing any of those three things. And then you went on to do them. And I'm sure you feel a whole lot better now. Your career is on. You're, you know, people that can't see you, you're fit and slim. And so was any of these stories of people that was sedentary and didn't do anything to for a healthy lifestyle? That's probably the word. So.
Yeah. So look, you, when you talk to people, I know I haven't listened to all of your podcasts clearly, cause there's too many of them. Right. But,
yeah, but like two of them right now. Right.
Yeah, right. Okay. But look, you talk to people about things that help them change their lives and their outlook on lives and kind of how to use, you know, goal setting and how, I mean, right. You do these kind of intentional things. And for me, like wanting to be healthy and doing the things you need to do to be healthy are very different things. And you know, and wanting things to go a certain way, that's not really enough. You got to take the action to make it happen. And, you know, everybody's journey is their own, right? There are a lot of people that will sit here and literally pound the table, Mirna, saying, this is what you need to do. Don't go to traditional medicine. There's homeopathic ways and there's, you know, this and that. And they could be right, but they could also be very wrong. There's other people that will say, I'll put my faith in God and I'll let God make the choice. And they could be right for them and they could be wrong for them. Some people want to lean on traditional medicine. Some people, I mean, we all know the 97-year-old woman that's drinking whiskey and smoking cigarettes and is healthy, right? And we all know the 25-year-old that is living super healthy life that all of a sudden gets breast cancer and dies, right? We all know that. So it's not really, there's no answer. But I'll tell you one thing for sure is that if you're not paying attention to the obvious, which for me, the obvious was stop smoking, lose some weight, start moving around, right? Start eating healthier. Those are obvious things to do. If I don't start doing the obvious, then I'm obviously not going to be in a good situation.
Hey, you got good wisdom. Good wisdom. I'm liking our conversation. I like that because you're very true. Some people will say, you know, like my brother refused to stop eating meat. You know, the meat lovers, you know, so there's so much evidence that shows that meat has, you know, these bad things for you, whatever. Mm-hmm. He refused to eat meat, he's gonna eat, I love my steak or whatever. Because he's saying, hey, you know, this person ate meat for the whatever and nothing happened to them. You're very right. You know what I mean? And the obvious, I like what you just said, the obvious is if you start having health problems, right, then why not cut out darn meat, you know, or at least cut it down, right, or something, whatever it is. I just chose meat, but it could be, you said, smoking. It could be the fact that you don't move, right? You sit on the, you sit down at work, and then you come home and you sit down, and you're not walking, you're not moving, you're not doing anything. I love that. That's a good word, the obvious. That's a good word. It doesn't
the obvious.
Mean,
yeah.
It doesn't mean you're right, because healthy athletes, super athletes that are in the NBA or in the football or whatever, you're right. Something happens and you say, well, how could this person, a super athlete, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yeah, they are going to be the exceptions, right? But generally speaking, if you want to prolong your life and not have disease, then you've got to do, you know, you have to make a lifestyle shift. So.
But very basic things, right? You sleep better, eat better, exercise. Very, very basic things, right? Eat better, sleep better, and exercise. Those are very basic things, but what happens is we kind of like limit ourselves and we go, I'll start tomorrow, or I'll, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Or we trick ourselves and we go, hey, if I walk around the block after dinner, that's exercise. Well, it's really not. I mean, it's good for you, but it's not really going to change your health, right? You know, what would change your health would be to eat a smaller dinner and go to bed earlier and get up early and work out. That would be way better than the other, right? So I think that nobody's perfect and it's okay to not be perfect, but certain basic things we should do. If you're eating half of your kid's Halloween bag, that's probably not a good idea, right? That's probably too much sugar.
I like that one. We're recording this interview a couple of days after Halloween. That's a good one. Yes. That's a good one. Yeah. Now, I have not read your book, but I did read some of some things that you've mentioned. And one of them stood out to me that I want to bring out to the attention of my listeners. One story was from this woman that's called, her name is Patricia. And from what she's saying, I can delve into her mindset, and I can delve into that she's had a hard life, because she made the comment that I don't get colds, I get cancer, which tells me that cancer kept coming back like as often as a cold. But one of the reasons that I want to touch on it is because I also know that if you walk around saying that, then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So what can you share about that story?
Oh, wow. That's a great insight. Yeah. So her story is really fascinating. And one of the things that was hilarious was like the second conversation I had with her, she goes, do we really want to be talking? Like, my life's not that interesting. Right. And I'm just like, yeah, let's keep talking, because everybody has told me that. So I'm sure you're no different. So yeah. So I don't know in her case. So here's where, let me try to explain her story in short order. Her story is pretty fascinating, because I thought it was about the fact that she had beat cancer 5 different times over a 35-year period, right? But that's not what her story is about. Her story is really, really interesting. And my book, it isn't prescriptive, right? It doesn't say, do this, Myrna, don't do that. Do this, listener, don't do that. It's not like that. It's, I just tell the story and we can take what we want from it. And near the end of her, me talking to her, I asked Patricia, I go, hey, what's your secret? Like, how, and I'll frame that in a minute. Okay. But I go, what's your secret? And if I didn't know her story, when I heard her answer, I would roll my eyes. I'd be like, oh, this is stupid, whatever. Right. But knowing her story, it means all the world to me. I think about it all the time. Her answer to my question of like, well, how did you get through this? Like, what was your mindset? Because you're a big mindset person, right? And she said to me, and I'll tell you what her story is in a minute, but she said to me, well, look, David, she goes, ever since I moved on from point X, and I'll give you point X in a second. She said, every time that I moved on from point X, all I did was I just said to myself, every single day, you have to put your feet on the ground, get up out of bed, make your bed, and go about your day. Now, sometimes, David, I was able to make my bed and walk away. Other times, I make my bed and I lay right back into it. But every day, I wanted to get up and put my feet on the ground and make my bed and go about my day. And I went, oh, wow. Now, not knowing her story, if you told me the secret to life was get your feet on the ground and make your bed and go about your day, I'd roll my eyes going, whatever. You know, good for you. That's a little sticky note I'll put on my window, but it's not really going to affect me, right? But her story is this. So when she's a teenager, young woman, she gets into a relationship, and the relationship is exceptionally abusive. And it is to the point where she has is forced to cut ties with every person that she knows, including her family, friends. She's not allowed to go out on her own. He beats her up if he just thinks that she's having a bad thought. I mean, it's horrible. Okay. So she, after 4 years, learns how to escape by getting a another identity. And she escapes that. Okay. And that's not really her story. Shortly after she escapes, she gets diagnosed with cancer for the first time. And over a 35-year period, she gets diagnosed with cancer five different times and five different types of cancer, very serious. But that, to me, is not really her story either. Her story is, in between escaping and the first cancer, she met someone. And he was the only person that she had ever met that she could trust and that she could love and that she felt would love her no matter what. And he helped her recover from that situation that she had escaped from. And he was beside her for her whole life, during which time she was fighting all these different cancers and living her life and doing whatever. And when she was in the midst of one of her battles with cancer, her dad, she was a caregiver for her dad with cancer. She had had friends that she had helped through cancer diagnoses and other things. And she looked at herself one day in the mirror and she said, "Hey, don't walk around like all burdened. Don't walk around all emotional. Everybody has their time in the barrel, man. You know, right? All you do is just keep getting up, keep putting your foot on the ground, make your bed and go about your day." And I'm just like, holy cow. Imagine she had been through all of that. And the only solution to her was, you know what? Everybody's got a tough life. Everybody has it bad. You could be burdened by it or you could not. Just get your feet on the ground, make your bed and go about your day. I'm like, that's brilliant. Right. And so that's Patricia's story. So, I mean, there's way more to her story, right?
Yes. I like it, but awesome. Well, you surprised me with that answer, but I almost get it. Now, when I looked at that statement, "I don't get colds, I get cancer," I thought that it was like saying, you know what, I'm always sick. And then you become always sick, like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
But you flipped it and you said that she's looking at cancer almost the same way you look at a cold, something that you get through.
Yeah.
Something that you get through and you just go on with your life and put your foot down. I love it.
You know what? One of the first things she said to me, Myrna, is she goes, "I never been sick a day in my life. I never had a cold. I never had a flu. I never felt bad." She said, "Except for cancer and all the other stuff that came with it." She goes, "I literally have never been sick a day in my life." And she goes, "If somebody wrote a story about me, it would be titled, 'I don't get colds, I get cancer.'" And I said, "That's the title we're going to use." Because anytime she was sick, it was cancer. It wasn't anything else.
Yeah, it's just like a cold. I love it. Again, we're talking here mindset. And I thought she had a defeated mindset. But no, she has a mindset of triumph and a mindset. Yes, listen, it's all in the mind. Trust me, healing, that's where it is. It's how you think about the thing that makes a difference. That's awesome. I am totally enjoying our conversation. So great. So, all right. So, your book is called Cycle of Lives, Stories of the Emotional Triumphs and Triumphs of Cancer. So yep. I think one of the questions I have here is what you want the reader to walk away with. But I think that you already answered that. You want to add anything or maybe wrap it up in a nice little bow? What sure. do you hope the reader will walk away with?
Great. And thank you. It's a great way to try to wrap a bow around it. Well, first of all, what I want them to know is that each one of the book participants, doctor, patient, loved one, whatever, survivor, they chose a cancer focused charity or other charity that they wanted the proceeds of the book to go to. So 100% of the proceeds of the book, no matter where it's sold or how it's sold, it gets divided up between the organizations that they chose. So that's number one. What I want the reader to know is they'll be doing some good financially. There's not a lot of money in books, but 100% of it will go to support their organizations. But I think what more, you know, like that saying we talked about it earlier, like you never know what people are going through, you know, like we really have no idea what people are going through, right? Patricia went up, if she finished, she got a master's in art. She's an amazing artist, right? And when you were sitting next to her in the art class and admiring her work and she's admiring yours, you would have no idea what the heck she had gone through, right? And when you're when Dr. Myers, like I mentioned to you earlier, is in there caring for you, and she really is giving you personal care and attention, you don't know that she had to go through the burden of being discriminated against as a woman doctor at her time. She's just there to take care of you, right? You never really know what people are going through. And I think what the book does by opening up people's hearts and minds to these stories, right? If we were able to, Marina, tell your story and the poignant kind of points, the highs and lows of your life, and frame it in a way that people could really understand what somebody might have gone through and what somebody might be going through that's in our lives, and maybe can kind of connect, you know, what they've learned from what you went through to maybe what somebody's going through, then I think that that's what I was hoping to do with the book. And what I like to tell people is this: we're all busy, we all have very complicated lives. I guarantee you, if you're absolutely honest and answer this question looking in the mirror, is there somebody in your life that you haven't called, that you haven't reached out to, that you haven't followed up with, that you've been just waiting for the right time because you don't know if you want to invade their space, or maybe you think they're over it and you don't want to bring them back to it, or maybe you're waiting for them to, there's somebody in your life that you want to connect to that needs you to connect with them at a deeper level, and possibly learning about these, what the people in the book went through, you might go, oh, maybe I could try this, or maybe I could try that, or this worked for that person, this didn't work for that person, maybe I could do the opposite, or right? If we all were truthful, there's somebody that's hoping that we call them.
Yeah, that's powerful. Right? Yes, that's powerful. Yes. And the other end of that is, you know, you put it off and then it's too late kind of thing. You know what I mean? So that's powerful. I love it. I love it. Because what you see is there's so much deeper, you know. Right now I have an analogy about an iceberg, like what you see on top, there's miles below, and we never, we never go below, right? We just take everything at face value. So very, very good. I love it, David. Great work that you put these stories out there. I love stories. I love listening to stories. I learned so much from them. Because every story has got a little bit of nugget for you. That's the reason it's there. Something that you can learn from, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's amazing. So thank you very much. Now, how can people get their hands on your book? How can they connect with you on social media and follow your work?
Well, thank you for that. Yes, the book is available wherever books are sold. So Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, whatever. Up until a week ago, I couldn't have said this, but now the Audible is out. So it's available as a book, as an ebook, or as an audio book. In fact, we had 15 different actors each play one of the different, read one of the different stories. So it's very entertaining and very inspirational too. It's not very heavy. I mean, it's heavy, but it's not heavy in a negative way, right? There's a lot of inspiration that can come from these stories. They can connect with me on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, or go to my website, cycleoflives.org, and they could learn about the institutions that we're supporting and all the other things that are going on around this whole Cycle of Lives project.
What's your handle on social media?
It is, on Facebook, it's Cycle of Lives.
Okay.
And on Instagram, it's David Richmond _ Cycle of Lives.
Okay. All right. So I will add that to the website.
I tried to keep it the same, right? Cycle of Lives, and we're all living a cycle of life, and it's
like a connection. You forgot that one.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right, the cycle, right? Yeah, uh-huh.
Exactly. Great.
That's awesome. All right. Well, listen, I thoroughly enjoyed this. One of my favorite pastimes is to listen to inspirational books while I do my walk. I mean, I move. I do a 5K every morning. Wow. And I will definitely get your book and listen to it. So,
thank you. That's awesome.
You're an audible. Great. Great. Well, listen, thank you so much, David, for sharing the Cycle of Lives with us and the people that you've met, and you're sharing your sister's story. You know, trauma sometimes comes in our lives so that we can, you know, help others, whether it's, you know, our personal trauma or something that we've witnessed. And I love that you have taken the lessons from your sister's life, and now you're touching millions of lives. So thank you so much for that. Of course, coming on the podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Transform Your Mind, to Transform Your Life radio podcast and television show. This is basically what I want to do for you. The guests that I bring on board would, you know, give you some kind of an inspiration, some kind of a nugget, some type of thing that you can do. If it's one small thing, and one of the things we can take away from this interview is, like David said, pay attention to the obvious. If your body is showing you something, don't ignore it. Pay attention to it, because, you know, we all want to live longer. We all want to live healthier lives. And sometimes it's just some small things that you can do in order to help that. So David, thank you so much again for coming on. Any last words you have before we wrap up?
No, I'm very excited to hear that you walk a 5K every day, or almost every day, if it isn't every day, but that's amazing. Okay, keep doing it.
Off, it's Sunday, my rest day.
Yeah, that is fantastic. That is like an obvious thing. It's a very good thing. And who would think that you could walk 3 miles every day? Like, you might not have thought that at some point in your life, and now you do it, and it's like just natural. So I applaud you for that, and thanks for doing what you're doing with the podcast, because I think helping people focus on what might take them to a happier, better place is really a noble mission. So good for you.
Thank you. Thank you for your noble mission too. And keep on writing and doing all those Ironman things. I applaud people that push themselves, you know, to see how much better they can be. That's amazing. I didn't really cycle back on that, but I applaud you for that. And something tells me that you did it when you were maybe in your 30s or 40s. You said your sister was 40. So you were, you know, you got to read between the lines. I know that. So the fact that you change your lifestyle and start doing marathons and riding and things like that, you know, in your 40s or late 30s, it's an amazing accomplishment.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll talk about that next time we talk, because after the book is done, after you're done listening to the book, you're going to want to come on and ask me about one story. One story is going to be like crazy to you. And you're going to go, this didn't really happen to that person, did it? No way. And you go, man, I got to get David back on and talk about that. And then we can talk about that other thing.
I will do. Definitely do that. Send you an email on that. It's awesome. All right. Well, all right, guys. Well, listen, we're fresh out of time. So thank you so much for tuning in. And until next time, blessings.